Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant! Bale going around and scoring for Tottenham! And still Ricky Villa. What a fantastic run! He scored! And he's away, Aaron Lennon! Crouch! Yes!
And welcome back to Wheeler Dealer Radio. It's been a long hiatus. It's been a long time in the wilderness, but finally we're back. Started with months of no podcast, but now we're here. This is Skipjack from Cartilage Free Captain, and I am joined tonight by Lennon's Eyebrow. You will hear me referred to as Greg at various points, and Lennon's Eyebrow referred to as Ben at various points. So, Ben, how are you doing?
Hey, man. Doing pretty good.
You excited for another exciting week of Spurs action after a weekend of the magic of the FA Cup?
Yeah, that was miserable. But I'm glad that we're doing this. I'm glad that we've conquered this podcast from the Bryans.
Finally taking it back from the Bryans. It took two guys from the commentariat to do it, but we did it. And now we're
here. We started at the bottom, and now we're here.
It's like three Drake references in the beginning of the show, and they're all the same reference, so I'm pretty proud of that. An auspicious beginning to the new era of Wheeler Dealer Radio. Well, it's been about a week, actually, since it happened, but we should start with Newcastle. I think this is one of the more hilarious games of the season, as that lineup made absolutely no sense, and we looked incredible for the entire match, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty comprehensive performance. I mean, we were shaky at the back, especially towards the beginning. But when aren't we? but, yeah, especially given the meltdown signs of apocalypse that Spurs, Twitter sphere, and the commentariat and everybody seemed to be feeling when that lineup was named, I think Sherwood maybe proved some people wrong. Well, maybe he does know what he's doing a little bit.
Let's not get carried away. I thought you actually brought this up to me over the last week that Jonathan Wilson was on Football Weekly Extra saying that before the Newcastle game, he would have said that he was the Sherwood was the most tactically inept manager in the Premier League. But now he doesn't know, which I thought was particularly hilarious. And actually,
see, that's huge strides.
It kind of is. I mean, that was a crazy line. I mean, did anyone play on the left wing in that line? I mean, is Kyle Naughton the most natural left winger in that lineup? I mean, that lineup was crazy. It was insane. And it worked. And maybe that's just because Newcastle are terrible. Maybe it's because Sherwood is an idiot savant. I don't know. But I liked how it worked out.
I mean, I think in hindsight, it shouldn't have been that surprising. You know, at first blush, when we saw the lineup and we saw four central midfielders, it looked a little crazy, but Dembele held his position on the right side of midfield, right forward, pretty well. And, I mean, he looked good there against Liverpool last year. You know, the team suffered as a whole because we didn't have anybody to replace Dembele in midfield while he was out gallivanting on the wing. But now with Nabil Bentaleb and Etienne Capoue and Paulinho in there, you know, we didn't suffer any problems in midfield as a result of Dembele out of position. And, you know, that's where he started as a wide forward in Holland. And it looks like he's still got the skill set to be effective there.
Well, I think we all know the success of this game is down to Capoue. I have to get one in for Mechanic, who's not here. But for Capoue playing this DM, which we all know Enoch is opposed to and Levy is opposed to and will not let Sherwood play with DMs, but that helped. And while I do think that debate is completely overblown and I'm just making fun of people, I would say that having Capoue back there let us see a much better Bentaleb than we've seen in quite a few matches.
And a much better
defensive responsibilities, or at least wasn't primarily defensive in his responsibilities.
Right. For all the people who have been hating on him all along, you know, he was very much forced to play in a position he's not particularly comfortable with. He's never had to play as the deepest midfielder with that much defensive responsibility. And, you know, he didn't perform that poorly in that role, but I think we finally saw what this kid is capable of when he's given license to attack and get forward. He may have been the man of the match. And on the other side of midfield, you had Paulinho, who, you know, had no defensive responsibilities either, and he did a really good job getting into the box and linking up well with Adebayor and making himself a threat. So, yeah, yay Kapu. And maybe it's a sign that, again, Sherwood might know what he's doing. Maybe against all odds, he's learning.
Well, why do you think Kapu's in that? Do you think it's a fitness issue or an attitude issue? Or do you think it's just, like, he's attacking, this is how he feels like playing Newcastle? I mean, it's maybe it's just him becoming more sophisticated as he sort of grows in confidence or grows to know the players more. What do you think the reason is that we're getting Kapu now?
I honestly couldn't tell you, and that's sort of how I feel after every one of Sherwood's lineups. I don't know why he made the choices he did or why it worked or if he's going to stick with what worked the next time out. So, yeah, I really have nothing to take away from that other than Kapu played one game and it worked well, and we'll see what happens next.
Maybe it's because he looked at his at the game and thought, man, I sure would like a clean. Okay, I'm sorry. That was awful.
Boo, get out. Bring back mechanic.
So, but this does speak to the sort of recent run of form Spurs had. And we've seen a lot of statistic article based articles come out recently that sort of argue that Sherwood has kind of been as lucky as AVB was unlucky, in that shots, I think I saw one that 51% of our shots in the danger zone are going in, and just some obscenely high level, whereas you sort of looked at AVB and it was kind of the flip side of that. But at the same time, you look at games, even with games like Everton in the mix, which we'll get to in a second, I think that there's something to be said for the eye test, and I don't want to poo-poo statistics here because I think they are valuable and important to understanding what's happening. But there is a certain eye test. As much as I know you and I were trying to convince ourselves we weren't as bad as we looked under AVB, we looked really bad under AVB. And defense aside, which does look a lot worse under Sherwood, we do look a lot more dangerous at the very least under Sherwood. And some of that is statistically attributable to we're not taking pot shots from 30 yards out anymore. We are shooting more in the box. But despite these, you know, oh, Sherwood's getting lucky, I mean, there is some method to this madness, right? I mean, we look way more dangerous than we have looked earlier in the year.
I don't know if I'm willing to commit to that either. I mean, I know I've talked with Ed, and he is very adamant that something is going right. Sherwood is probably responsible for it. But at the same time, I think we do look more dangerous, and we do look more vulnerable, and I think a lot of it is just down to the fact that Sherwood plays a much more open, attacking, end-to-end kind of balls-to-the-wall style, which when we do get the ball and we do go forward with it, you know, we're very direct and we try and attack and we try and score. But it also leaves us very vulnerable to conceding, especially goals through the middle. I don't know. So, yeah, it's dangerous looking at both ends of the field.
And it's certainly dangerous in every possible way.
Right, and not necessarily good ways. I mean, it's definitely more exciting. For all Sherwood's faults or, you know, strokes of brilliance, you definitely can't say that the football's been less entertaining than it was under AVB. And I guess that's something.
Well, I mean, even that first match against Southampton, I remember watching that with you in Atlanta at that bar, and, like, it was kind of weird to see this many goals going in and see us attacking their goals so much. It was a strange, surreal experience, and I think it's still a semi-surreal experience because, God, we looked really bad for about half a season, or at least really boring if defensively solid.
Yeah, and we never looked likely to score that many goals in a game. I think that was the first time we scored 3 goals in a league match all season.
Oh, God. I think you're right.
I mean, we did plenty in the Europa League against, you know, terrible opposition. But this was, yeah, that was the first game that we scored 3 goals. And then since then, we did it against Swansea and Newcastle, which is an improvement. But I'm honestly surprised that more games haven't been that 3-2, 4-3, Southampton-esque kind of scoreline where everyone's scoring goals and we either happen to edge it by one or not. Instead, we seem to be keeping clean sheets against all odds and scoring goals. I don't know. I don't get it. I really don't fucking get it.
It's strange because we haven't had our first choice defensive pairing. We just got that back this week. AVB didn't even have that. And you can tell there's some rust on those legs. Kabul in particular looks a little not like quite there physically. Vertonghen still looks like he's figuring it out a little bit, getting back.
Yeah, but compared to what we have seen, it's still they look incredible. They look like if we had had these guys healthy all season, AVB might still have a job.
Isn't that a horrifying thought? But going back to the sort of Spurs riding their luck, I think the Everton game is the most, probably the best example of that under Sherwood. Certainly the best team that we've seen this against, we've seen this from under Sherwood, where we really did, ride out what was I don't know if I go so far as to say dominant, but certainly better Everton performance, and they just couldn't put it away, probably because Lukaku was, on loan to some Dutch team for Chelsea or something, or hurt, whatever. But they just couldn't finish, and we sort of took advantage of that, and we got better in the second half. Now, I think, the predominant narrative was, Everton was so much better, they deserve points, and blah, blah, blah. And I don't know if that's just the English press doing the whole underdog thing, because I felt like that was every game we had in the beginning of the season under AVB. But there's this perception that we weren't good in that game, and while we certainly got lucky, I mean, I thought we were the better team in the second half. Did Everton have a shot on target in the second half? I don't think they did.
They didn't. I mean, they're always going to struggle for goals when Stephen Naismith is your starting striker. But, yeah, and I think Sherwood, again, deserves credit for what happened in that game. I mean, we were definitely overmatched and rode our luck a little bit in the first half. Hugo Lloris bailed us out on several occasions. It was funny, in his post-match interview, somebody asked Sherwood, after Everton's early dominance, were you tempted to make a change at halftime? And Sherwood looked at him like he was an idiot, and he was like, I did make a change at halftime. I didn't make any subs, but, he brought Dembele further back where he had been playing him as sort of the attacking midfielder, and he brought him back to help out Bentaleb in midfield, and that change definitely helped turn the tide. And I think once the second half got going, we never really looked in danger of giving up a goal, that penalty shot at the end aside. So, yeah, I think Sherwood did what needed to be done and turned the game in our favor, and we won. It took a moment of brilliance from Kyle Walker and Adebayor to actually get the goal that won us the 3 points. But
that was a great goal.
It was that control from Adebayor to hold off three guys, and then he knuckleballed it into the back of the net. There was no spin on that ball. It was beautiful.
And the other thing is, I'm going to say
no. Go on.
Five words that I would love to go in a time machine and say this to you a year ago and see what your reaction is. How smart was Walker there?
Yeah. I mean, that was, wonderful. Heads up, quick thinking from that kid. He looked at the field, saw that Adebayor was in a decent position, and just went for it. I was shocked that it happened, but I'm glad that it did.
I feel like I've seen that goal scored on us several times, even if it hasn't actually been, but it just feels that way.
Yeah, that definitely seems like the kind of thing Spurs would concede.
Yes, against, Aston Villa on the next to last day of the season when we need 3 points to get in the Champions League or something. That it feels like one of those goals.
Well, if that does happen, now we don't even have Scott Parker to sub in to hold on to the draw, so.
Oh, I hate Harry Redknapp so much. Moving on to our upcoming fixtures, we have Dnipro, I'm never going to say that correctly, coming up this week. Fourth place team in the Ukrainian League. I'm sure we're all shaking in our boots. Honestly, Ukrainian protesters are probably more of a danger to Spurs than this team. I don't know much about them other than they have that Ukrainian winger who Liverpool was trying to buy on deadline day. And despite every other team who was in it for him dropping out, they still couldn't get him. that's the only player I know about there. I think the obvious headline here is Juan de Ramos coming back to White Hart Lane. Or, well, eventually we'll be coming back to White Hart Lane. But seeing Spurs for the first time since he got sacked in the morning. I was not around for the Juan de era. You were. What are your thoughts on this, Ben?
Well, I was sad when we kicked Yol to the curve to bring him in. Martin Yol was a big fan favorite and had taken us to back-to-back fifth-place finishes. So at the time, sacking him seemed a little stupid. But he had gotten off to a rough start to the season, and Juan de Ramos had been on quite a tear with Sevilla. You know, he won back-to-back UEFA Cups with them. He beat us along the way in one of them. And I think that was when Levy first decided that, hey, this guy's somebody who might be awesome.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't Ramos the last non El Clasico team in Spain to mount a serious title challenge until Atletico this year, obviously?
Yeah, I mean, you know, teams have been up there for a little while along the way, but Sevilla was a legitimate threat to the established order during Ramos's tenure. You know, they never really made a credible threat for the title, but they were up there. And since he's gone, Sevilla has sort of drifted back into sort of mid-table, pushing for a Europa League kind of spot. So there's definitely something to him. And he did well at Real Madrid, or well enough. but, yeah, you know, and winning the Carling Cup under Ramos is, you know, between that and qualifying for the Champions League, that's probably the highlight for me as a Spurs fan. That 5-1 win over Arsenal was just unreal to watch that unfold, especially we haven't beaten them in so many years, to just beat the pants off of them.
Well, there's a video of that game that actually helped make me a Spurs fan. Like, it was such a cool, and you could tell it was such a cool game, and you could tell how much it meant to everyone. That,
yeah, it was
sold me on the team.
You know, and then the final against Chelsea, who again was not a team we beat very often.
Well, they just couldn't handle Jonathan Woodgate. If only he'd been healthy more often.
That's right. He would have made the difference between us and the title challenge, probably. So I don't know. Everything looked like it was really coming together, and that, you know, we were turning a corner, and, you know, there was a bright future on the horizon. And then his 2.8 games collapse was the stuff of much ridicule. You know, we were glued to the floor of the table for some time, even after he left. I don't know, given his comments to the media about, you know, the club and how it's run and how they don't give managers time and all that bullshit, it's really not fair for him to say, given how disastrous the end of his reign was. He definitely had to go, and I think we were glad to see the back of him, despite the trophy he brought us. And in hindsight, it looked like it was a pretty good idea, given the success Harry Redknapp had.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the interview, because that's kind of what I wanted to talk about with Ramos, because he had an interview with Sid Lowe in The Guardian, if people haven't read it, where he voiced a lot of complaints about his time at Spurs, and a lot of them, to me, sort of seem of a piece with the Enoch out crowd that we're seeing lately. Levy doesn't back his managers. The director of football didn't sign all the guys I wanted, or they weren't all people that, you know, were my specific targets. You know, one day I won a trophy and I was loved, and then the next day I'm sacked. And it's sort of, you know, while I think there are valid criticisms to be levied at Levy, because there's a bad pun.
Waka, waka, waka.
Yeah. While there's certainly valid criticisms of Levy, I feel like his are pretty ridiculous when you consider that, A, we were really at the bottom of the table when we canned him, and B, kind of the crappy manner in which he was hired, sort of, you know, from what I understand, our interest in him and his hiring while Martin Yol was our coach was hardly a secret. And so he came in under pretty crappy circumstances. So he didn't have a problem with it then. And then he...
Right. Yeah, he had no problem seeing Yoel get sacked basically in the middle of a game. Like, Martin Yoel found out he was getting fired on the sideline during a Spurs match.
From it was like a text message to his son, right?
Yeah, it was not the most dignified way to lose your job.
And I think it gets worse. Like, he talks about, oh, I didn't get the players I wanted, which is, you know, that gets into the whole director of football debate, which I think, as an American, always, I don't understand it. We have the equivalent over here in GMs in all of our major sports. It causes very few problems outside of super dysfunctional organizations over here. You know, you read him talking about, like, oh, he didn't sign the guys I wanted. He brings up David Bentley, which, you know, fair enough. That was a really bad signing, and I'd be mad about it, too, if I was a manager. But at the same time, they assembled a collection of talent, which basically the same squad made the Champions League the next year. I mean, it wasn't like Gareth Bale had a huge, like, blew up between them, and that was the difference. Like, he just, you know, didn't succeed with this team, and you know, his sort of sour grapes and complain about management sort of betray this complete, utter lack of awareness that I guess explains why he's coaching in Eastern Europe now and not one of the big five countries.
Right. Yeah, if you look at the squad that he both inherited and that was signed over the summer, you know, the complaints about players, he was like, we didn't get David Villa and who else was it?
It was Eto at the peak of Eto's prowess. Right.
You know, I'm sorry that it's not a game of Football Manager and you can't just have everyone you want. But the players we did sign, you know, we signed fucking Luka Modric that summer, who I don't know if he's aware, but is a very good player. You know, we signed Pavlyuchenko, who maybe didn't have the best Spurs career, but, you know, he looked like a decent buy at the time. He had humiliated England in qualifiers. He was in the team of the tournament at the Euros. You know, he'd been scoring in Russia for years. You know, it looked like a solid acquisition. You know, he complains that we sold Berbatov, or the manner that we sold Berbatov in, you know, was not to his liking. But I really don't know what Levy could have done. You know, he held Man U to ransom, you know, for as much money as he could for Berbatov. He had brought strikers in to replace him at the time. I think the real wild card there was not Berbatov, but it was Robbie Keane suddenly deciding that he has 17 boyhood clubs and Liverpool just happened to be one of them. You know, I think that was a bit of a wild card that nobody really expected. You know, Berbatov leaving was, the writing was kind of on the wall. So, yeah, we ended up losing Keane and getting Fraser Campbell instead, and that sucks.
Well, two of his big complaints, he sort of rags on Pav and Bent. And I think he's, you know, I think that's a very conscious calculation because both of these guys are kind of jokes today.
Right.
But at the time, neither of, like, Pav was still an up-and-comer. You know, wasn't a bad, like you said, wasn't a bad signing at the time. And Bent was not the complete clown that he is today. Like, he was still a decent player.
No, and even after he left, he scored 20-something goals for Sunderland the next season. Like,
yes. Yes, I mean, the man's right. Always God, been, I forgot about that.
He's always been a good goal scorer. He was never much of a complete player. But, you know, throughout all of preseason, we had set up in this sort of 4-5-1 system, which was still fairly novel at the time. And it looked like we were set up to play on the break and feed Bent these balls behind the defense where he could just one-on-one with the keeper. And as a strategy, if that's the game plan, Bent's not a bad guy to have on your team. You know, he'll put the ball in the back of the net if you get it to him in a good position. And we brought in Modric, who's one of the best playmakers in Europe. You know, at the time he was young, but it still looked like that was going to be the case. You know, even David Bentley, who is a total joke at this stage in his career, you know, he had come off some excellent years at Blackburn. I think he scored like a hat trick at Old Trafford. You know, he really did look like he might be the second coming of David Beckham. I mean, it was still a weird signing at the time, given that we had Aaron Lennon, who was good. You know, we had Gio Dos Santos, who, again, after he left Spurs, has been good. You know, the talent was there. And again, Harry Redknapp's team, once he took over, wasn't wildly different. The biggest change, I think, was Wilson Palacios coming in to shore up the midfield. But nothing that Ramos has complained about says, like, I didn't have a defensive midfielder. That wasn't his gripe. So I don't know.
It's just, I think it bothers me more because I feel like his complaints are, you know, he wants to have sour grapes about it because that's why he's over in Eastern Europe. That's whatever, fine, whatever he's got to tell himself to get through the night. But I feel like I see these strains of arguments, like this basically, oh, why doesn't Levy run the club like I run my football manager? And also, why doesn't he, you know, he charge us $3 for tickets and buy Lionel Messi? And it's just, it strikes of a naivete that just I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't understand what Ramos was expecting himself coming from Sevilla. It's not like they were a side with tons of cash that they could just throw at whoever that he wanted. You know, they had to operate on a budget. They had to make the most out of, you know, the talented players they groomed through their academy. You know, he built his side around Dani Alves, who was a right back. And yes, he's like incredible, but he still, his sort of MO was he built a side for success around the kind of talented players he had at his disposal. You know, I think that was what Levy saw in him when he brought him in, was that he was a guy who could maximize talent and build an effective system around the guys he had, and not the kind of guy who, you know, needed an oil sheik to play fantasy football for him and buy anybody he could think of. And so in light of that, his comments seem especially disingenuous and surprising.
Well, at least we don't have a fan base that thinks that way now. So,
right.
Yeah, it's funny to me how similar this seems to the sort of, and admittedly these are everything's triple, double, secondhand or whatever. But some of the stuff we've heard about ABB is that, oh, he didn't get the players he wanted. When it's like, you can look at every situation and it's like, you know, you're either dealing with Porto or third-party agents, or he wants guys like Hulk who are going to, you know, cost basically as much as it costs to sell you Gareth Bale. It's just this sort of like, maybe they think they hit a jackpot when they go to England. Maybe Levy's telling them behind closed doors, oh, yeah, I'll buy you whoever you want. I don't know. Yeah,
maybe.
certainly that wasn't the case with Redknapp. I think Redknapp was pleased when he got Scott Parker, let alone, you know, Hulk.
Yeah, I mean, if anybody has a complaint that he wasn't backed in the transfer market, it's got to be Harry. I mean, our signings under him were Ryan Nelson, Luis Saha, William Gallus.
Did we spend $51 million or something ridiculous his first summer here? Or his first winter here?
His first winter, and a lot of that was rebuying players we had sold. We bought back Defoe. We bought back Keane. We bought back Kabul. We bought back Pascal Chimbanda for some reason.
And Harry wonders why he wasn't backed after. I mean, we're talking about a guy who went and saw Luis Suarez and was like, eh, can't hack it in the Premier League. Like, maybe that's why we didn't spend money under you, Harry.
Right. And the one person who hasn't complained about the lack of funds is Harry Redknapp. So who knows? So we spent $100 million for ABB this summer. I think we did a fairly decent job.
At least on paper, yeah.
Yeah. I guess, do you want to talk about the Baldini?
Yeah, I think that's rumors. A very nice segue. Good job, Ben. Thank you. So it came out today, and I think our own Kevin wrote a lot on the website about this today, and I think he's generally right in that the rumors coming out is that Baldini, Sherwood, and Levy aren't all on the same page, and that Baldini might be out over the summer. Given that Baldini is was asked for by ABB, and given that Sherwood is a tactical Cro-Magnon, according to the English press, I think this is probably more of them putting two and two together. And it's all supposition, but maybe it's not. What do you think of this story?
I don't know what to make of it. I think if we're just judging Baldini on his transfer record, then I think we've got to stick with him. I mean, yes, Eric Lamela has not been the new Gareth Bale. Like, boo fucking who. He's had a lot of injury problems. He's 21 years old, you know, moving to a new country. We've seen plenty of players over the years take time to adapt to a new league and new circumstances. And that doesn't mean that the kid's a failure or that it was money poorly spent. You know, at the time, he was one of the best goal-scoring wide players in any major league. You know, he was in the team of the season in Serie A last year. He's good. He obviously has talent. You know, he didn't play a lot under AVB and has been injured since then. So I don't really know that there's been enough time with him on the pitch to really judge that signing a failure. That seems incredibly premature. You know, and you look at the rest of his signings, you know, Kapu was brought in to be Sandro's backup, which he has been and has done well when called upon. Like, yeah, he had a rough stint at center back, but that's not his position. And, you know, we were lucky to have him at all, you know, to fill that void. Kirkesh, you know, he...
I think Vlad gets a worse rap than he deserves from our fan base. Like, everyone talks about how awful he is. And yes, he's a suicidal, crazy person. But, like, as a third defender, which is what he was supposed to be for this team, he's fine. I mean, that everyone's, like, moaning about Caulker leaving. Like, if, in retrospect, with Kabul out, what have you, then yeah, maybe we should have kept Caulker. But, like, Kirakesh is fine for what he is. And he's young, too, so he'll probably get better.
Right, and the Caulker sale is not something you can really put at Baldini's feet anyway. You know, AVB said, you're not going to play. If you want to play, you should probably go. And he did. You know, it seemed like he very much was a driving force behind that, that he wanted first team minutes in a World Cup year, and he was going to go get him.
Yeah.
So we sold him for a decent price. You know, maybe we could have held out for more money, but... You know, selling him is not something I think that we should tar and feather Baldini over. You know, Nasser Chadli's been adequate. And,
all
you know,
these
he
guys
looks,
get hurt, so it's so hard to evaluate them.
Yeah, like, everybody's had. I mean, the only player who he brought in who hasn't had injury trouble is Soldado.
God.
And.
Well, you Soldado, break my heart, Roberto. You break my heart.
I guess that's the elephant in the room. If we're talking about Baldini and saying. You know, his transfer record is good. You got to look at Soldado.
Here's the thing about Soldado. Like, anyone rationally looking at that transfer back in August or whatever, before the season starts, you might say Spurs spent too much money on him. I could see that being something you would say. I cannot imagine any rational person looking at that and saying, oh, that'll be a disaster.
Right. And it... Especially given that Spurs have struggled for so long to find an elite striker. You know, we've all seen us try and sign guys like Suarez and Aguero and Giuseppe Rossi and whoever the fuck else and not sign them. You know, I think the fact that Baldini managed to land Soldado at all, I think should be a feather in his cap rather than something to criticize him for. Like, regardless of his performance, at the time we bought him, he was the striker who had scored more goals than anybody but Ronaldo and Messi over the past five seasons. Like, that's a record that you can't really sneeze at. And the fact that Baldini landed him for Spurs was a transfer coup, in a sense. You know, he...
You just hit on the reason I think... Like, if we're talking about should Baldini go... You've hit on the reason that I absolutely don't think he should, because say what else you want about Baldini. He actually we moved on our transfers this summer. Transfer negotiations were relatively swift and decisive. And maybe that's just because we were flush with all that Gareth Bale cash. But like there were no real protracted sagas this season. Like,
right, and you look at the ones that didn't pan out, like David Villa, who we almost got, and you know, a 0-hour bid for less money from Atletico.
Yes.
You know, that made him think, well, I can stay in Spain. I want to stay in Spain. And Barcelona was like, yeah, we're happy to take a loss on this because we're nice for some reason. That's not something to criticize Baldini for. You know, if Atletico hadn't come in at the last minute, he'd be a Spur
yes.
right now.
Yes.
You know, Willian, we had him locked up. He was at White Hart Lane signing the paperwork before Chelsea came in. Again, it's hard to say that's a failure of Baldini. I think even looking at Soldado as a failure, which I don't think I'm ready to do yet, despite his poor season. Even if we call that an unmitigated disaster, you know, he's still 6-for-7 on transfers. That's a very good record. You know, people have transfers that flop literally all the time.
we got Christian Eriksen for, what, 11 million pounds? Is that how much we paid?
That was a steal. I mean, that was a steal
at the beginning of the season. It's absolute grand larceny now. It's unbelievable that we got him for that little.
Yeah. I mean, he's one of the highest rated, you know, young players in the world, and we got him for pennies on the dollar, pence on the pound. I don't know how you do it in England, but we got him for absolutely nothing compared to what he's worth.
He's younger than Holtby, who looks like he just came out of his mother. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah. And I think the other thing you have to think about is, you know, if we're going to assume that, you know, Daniel Levy is money first, doesn't care about results on the pitch, he's just all about making money, blah, 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 then from that standpoint, Baldini leaving doesn't make any sense, because nobody has really lost value, you know, that we've bought under Baldini. Eriksen has got to be worth at least twice what we paid for him. Kapu and Chadli are probably worth, you know, the same. Same with Kirakesh. You know, Soldado, that, I mean, a 28-year-old striker, that's always going to be a depreciating asset. And those are the fees you kind of have to pay to get a guy in the prime of his career. So, yeah, he's going to lose money on that one.
I mean, Soldado could be scoring, you know, unless he was scoring 30 goals a season, you were going to take a loss on him.
Right. I mean, even then, at his age, who knows? You know, Lamela has plenty of time to justify his price tag. So on pitch, I don't think Baldini deserves to go. And from a financial perspective, it doesn't make sense. The only justification for him leaving would be if Levy decides Tim Sherwood is his new Harry Redknapp, and like Harry, he doesn't want a director of football, and Levy is willing to change the whole direction of the club to accommodate Tim Sherwood. And if that's something that sounds plausible to anybody listening, I don't really know what to tell you.
Oh, God. I have to say this about Tim Sherwood, since we're talking about Tim Sherwood and his potential long-term future with Spurs. Honestly, it's probably for the best that no matter how this – so – Let me start over. So when Tim Sherwood was brought in, he was brought in for an expressed purpose, which was disaster management. He was brought in to keep this from getting out of control. AVB, for whatever reason, we don't know exactly what, but between the results and my guess would be backroom shenanigans, was deemed he couldn't continue. Sherwood was the best option available when De Boer and Van Gaal wouldn't come here. So Sherwood has already kept the season from being an unmitigated disaster. That we are still within 3 points of Liverpool is nothing short of a miracle, even though a lot of that is down to what AVB had done here. But regardless of what happens, Champions League, no Champions League, Cup, no Cup, whatever, I think it probably makes the most rational sense for us to give Sherwood a handshake, a hefty payoff, and a good luck to you in his next job with a championship club, which is what he'd probably get if Spurs let him go after a relatively successful season, all things considered. On the other hand, if somehow, and this probably won't happen, if somehow we end up finishing above Arsenal, I don't care about any of that. He will be my hero, and I don't care. And I say we give him a big fat 5-year contract and keep him around, because that will be amazing.
5-year contract, make him the next Pardew.
Exactly,
8 years or plus.
Exactly. Look how that's worked out. Nothing went wrong when Pardew overperformed for a season and they gave him a fat contract. So nothing would go wrong with Spurs when he overperforms for a season and we give him a big fat contract.
I think you're right. I think we need to write a letter to Levy.
Oh, God. But what do you think the chances are? What do you think Sherwood's chances are here as we approach the home stretch of the season?
In terms of securing a future for himself or in terms of actually finishing in a good position in the league?
Both.
Okay.
We got time to fill. What, you got to go to work?
Yeah. I think fourth place is probably a pipe dream, but I can't stop dreaming. I mean, after Arsenal got shellacked by Liverpool and arguably should have drawn with them in the FA Cup this weekend, and they had a boring, boring draw with Man U in between, I don't know. I can't help but hold out hope that maybe the wheels are coming off and maybe they're going to start sliding down the table and maybe we can catch them.
Well, at the same time, don't forget, Liverpool is such a, look, they're probably a better team. They are a better team than us at this point. And their attack is ridiculous. But, they had no business winning that game at Stoke earlier this season. They honestly probably should have lost to, or at least drawn to Fulham if their goalkeeper wasn't a crazy person. I mean, I feel like it's not crazy to say, given that they're only 3 points ahead of us, that Liverpool's luck could run out.
Yeah, I mean, with their goal difference, I guess it's 4 points realistically ahead of us. But, you know, they're very Jekyll and Hyde. They seem to only show up sometimes against most teams, which, you know, there's not a lot of room for error.
No, Spurs are basically have to shoot the moon for the rest of the season.
Right.
And
well,
someone else's luck runs out.
Yeah, I mean, on either side of it, though, I think Liverpool, you know, a couple slip-ups, and if Spurs keep up their current form, which I don't know if we can, but if we do, you know, one or two bad results against, you know, the whole cities of the world, and Liverpool is suddenly on the outside looking in. It's tight enough that I can still dream, but I think the rational part of my brain has to say this ain't happening.
Well, we were talking about the eye test earlier. And to me, the eye test says there's no way in hell we're going to finish in the Champions League. But because we just don't put in performances that are as good as Liverpool's or Arsenal's. But the numbers don't lie, as they like to say. So
that's right. But even beyond that, I think if he doesn't finish fourth and a guy like Van Gaal or De Boer or honestly anybody with any kind of pedigree is available this summer, I don't see Levy not jumping all over it.
I think he could finish fourth and that might happen.
Yeah, I agree. Especially, I mean, a guy like Van Gaal who has won so many trophies in such a long, distinguished career. If he's available, I don't see how Levy can't bite his hand off at the opportunity to bring him to Spurs.
Well, I look forward to the long blog post under Van Gaal about us having lost the Spurs way. I anticipate them. I think they'll be fun to read, and I won't want to put my head through a window at all. Looking ahead, after I assume we both think that we're going to win in the Ukraine this week.
You know, that's actually an interesting question because I don't think we know yet what Sherwood's going to do with the Europa League.
Good point.
You know, he's shown he is not exactly a cup mastermind, having crashed out against West Ham and Arsenal in quick succession.
I'll give him a pass on West Ham. I will give him a pass on West Ham.
Sure.
He was in charge for a single day. Like, I will give the guy, even though we still should have won that damn game.
I feel like I could have managed a victory against West Ham.
Yeah, and then we would have gotten, like, we would have lost, like, 7-0 against City. So, like, you know, at the end of the day, he spared us some blushes. And that Arsenal game is interesting when you go back and look at it. Because, yes, Arsenal were the better team. Yes, they were outplaying us. But until, and think about the sentence I'm about to say, our left back gave the ball away in the center circle.
Right.
It was only a 1-0 game. And when you consider that, like, Eriksen had a ball that, like, Kenny Chesney was lucky to palm out, like, you know.
And we had Dawson, right? Was that the game where Dawson had a goal that was wrongfully ruled out for offside?
I think so. Yes, it was.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think we could have taken that game. But still, the point is I don't know. You know, we saw under Harry, he treated the Europa League as a place to see what the kids can do. Tim Sherwood seems to think that's what the Premier League's for. you know, AVB treated the Europa League as the Holy Grail. I can't imagine Sherwood is going to do that, but I also don't know if he'll go as far as Harry Redknapp. So I'm curious to see what kind of lineup we send out there and how first choice it is. So I think if we send out our first choice lineup, I think, you know, a victory is expected, but I can honestly see him sending out players that I may have never even heard of. So who knows? I don't know. I still like the Europa League. I would still like to win. You know,
absolutely.
A trophy is a trophy. But
do you realize if Tim Sherwood wins the Europa League this year, he'll have won more European trophies at Spurs than Arsene Wenger has won at Arsenal ever?
Yeah.
I mean, yes, I would love to win the Europa League. I mean, not it's for bragging rights. It's a cup. And it's like, you know what, if this was Sherwood and he got the team unexpectedly, like if AVB had sort of pissed in Levy's Wheaties at the end of the summer, and he just got the team in August. Like, I could see him looking at it as a distraction, but we're not in the group stage. We're in the, I don't know, Europa League. So we're in the, like, what, the last 64 or something? I don't know how many.
400.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. The 75-team deathmatch. But my point is, we're in the knockout stages. And it's the fourth-place team in the Ukraine. Like, let's take it to them. Like, we don't need to start a first-team lineup, but I would like to see us win these games. I would like to win a cup this year. And this is the only play we're going to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think we're going to do it, because I think then eventually Sherwood will have to run to Juve, and I don't think that's going to end particularly well.
Yeah, probably not. But it's hard because, you know, there's a lot to be said that the Europa League is a distraction and that our results coming back from Europe are not their best. And with things balanced as precariously as they are in the league, you know, treating the Europa League as the distraction it might be the wise course, assuming that any hope for a top four finish is still realistic. But I think if we all face facts that it might not be, then, you know, go all in on Europa League, at least come out of the season with something to show for it.
But we're also not there yet. We have Norwich on the weekend.
That's true. If we don't beat Norwich.
We should be able to beat Norwich regardless of whether we're going to Ukraine or not.
Like, tell that to Man City.
Good point. Good point.
I mean, our upcoming games are Norwich and Cardiff, who are two of the absolute worst teams in the league. They're both fairly abject.
I mean, don't forget that Cardiff game that we played them earlier in the year. Like, Soldado should have had a hat trick. Like, that keeper was on, you know, Spurs juice. What do you call it when the keepers, all these lower league keepers, have amazing games just against Spurs? Because
they've been drinking their Gary Root beer.
Gary Root beer. He was channeling the spirit of Gary Root beer. That's what he was doing. Oh, God. He was pulling a Gary Root beer. That's our official lexicon for that. He was pulling a Gary Root beer.
Yeah.
You're right. We should be able to beat both of these teams pretty easily. So I don't think the whole, like, trade-off of the Europa League is going to become a reality quite yet. I mean, obviously, he needs to be smart about it, but, you know, we're not facing Juve or, you know, a team that we're going to have to think twice about what we do.
Right. It's still the Europa League where we face teams we can't even really pronounce.
Yeah, we face, like, the bottom rungs of Eastern Europe, so, which is, like, going to be great for trivia quizzes in, like, 10 years, but not so great for football.
Yep.
Moving on, I assume we're both feeling good about Norwich and Cardiff.
Yeah, I feel fairly confident that we can take results from those two games. That's about all I'm going to say about that. Norwich sucks. Cardiff sucks. Chris Hughton might be the worst manager in the league, which I hate to say because I love Chris Hughton.
Were you the guy who had to write the manager shortlist thing on Chris Hughton when we hired AVB?
I hope not. I don't think so.
I think Ed was one of the guys arguing for him. I'm sure I'll be proven incorrect.
Yeah, that sounds like a Meadow post.
Did it talk about 18th century poetry? That's Nathan. Never mind. Let's sleep.
So, yeah, I think Norwich is terrible. I mean, Cardiff might be better under Solskjaer, but I'm not really going to count on that. I think we're in a pretty good place to keep Sherwood's improbable run going.
It'd be nice if we could keep it up, because, I mean, with the run of fixtures Arsenal and Liverpool have coming up, it's not crazy that they could drop points.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at strength of schedule, Spurs have one of the easiest schedules left to face, and Arsenal, I think, has the hardest in the Premier League. I mean, obviously, we still have to play a lot of good teams like Chelsea and Liverpool and Arsenal, but Arsenal has it worse. Yeah, I think so.
The hope that dare not speak its name.
So we'll see.
So speaking of our North London squatters, to round the show off with some fun rumor segments or fun tabloid segments. What do we think of Olivier Giroud's extracurricular activities?
You know, I think it takes a big man to admit when he's made a mistake, and I applaud Olivier Giroud for his actions. yeah, I don't know. I hope he contributes to their collapse. I hope his off-the-field problems ruin him for the rest of the season, and me and Arsenal have no striker, and Arsenal go into a tailspin, the likes of which we haven't seen since Harry Redknapp.
Can you imagine Mesut Ozil on Arsenal in the Europa League and the faces he will make? And
I bet they'll all be super bug-eyed.
Oh, my God. The tears on his shoulders would be glorious. Okay. Well, I think that wraps it up for us tonight. Do you have any further insights into Spurs, where we are right now?
I have zero insights. So much like Tim Sherwood, I have no idea what's going on.
No idea. Well, much like Tim Sherwood, I have no idea what is going on either. So I think that's a good place to end our first podcast. Hopefully this was more Southampton than West Ham. But hopefully, much like Tim Sherwood, we'll go on a nice run of form after this. And it will be much better now that Wheeler Dealer Radio has finally come back to Cartilage Free Captain. So, for Cartilage Free Captain, this is Skipjack signing off. Lennon's Eyebrow, you want to say goodbye?
Bye, everybody. See you next time.
Come on, you Spurs.